Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Tax increment financing, or TIFs, is a popular economic development tool. Using tax breaks and subsidies as development incentives, it's used a lot. Is it overused, abused, unfairly used? Joining me to talk about it are Dr. Molly Metzger, assistant professor in the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University. She's a member of Team TIF, an organization devoted to transparency and equity in the TIF world. Otis Williams is director of the St. Louis Development Corporation. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Good to be here.
Otis, let me begin with you. I think there's some confusion out there in the world that you live in that people don't fully understand whether there's a difference between tax abatement and TIFs.
Yes, there's clearly a difference between the two. Tax abatement is essentially freezing for a period of time, and it's always passed by law, for the taxes as they currently are. So, for instance, I'll give you an example. So if a person is currently paying, or if a property is currently assessed at a certain value and the taxes on it is $100, and tax abatement is granted, then it would be abated at $100. So the $100 would continue to be paid. With tax increment financing,
excuse me one second. You say the $100 would continue to be paid?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. It is only abating the increase that would occur.
Good. That's what we wanted to clarify.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So the with tax increment financing, it is essentially capturing the increment of the increase that would be provided to a special allocation fund. And in the case of the city, that particular fund is managed by the comptroller. So I'll give you another example. So if the project essentially is the taxes on it is generally another $100. But once a project is built, then the taxes that are being generated at that property is $1,000. Then the increment actually then goes into to the special allocation fund for that particular project.
That would be $900. It would go into the fund. And for use at what purpose?
There's a stated purpose. Generally, when tax increment finance legislation is passed, and so it would be used for that particular purpose. So we have a whole range of things. Generally, it is for infrastructure. For the improvement of infrastructure that supports a project. And we like to hold that in the city of St. Louis to not more than 15% of the total project cost.
Yeah. Molly, your organization is looking at this issue through the lens of transparency and equity. Mm-hmm. I gather, because you're looking at that, you feel that perhaps neither is very obvious in this process?
I think both could be improved, and specifically in talking about equity, we're talking about racial equity. Mm-hmm. So there's a history in St. Louis and around the country of public policies that have created segregation by race, and now that perpetuate segregation by race. And so we're trying to bring to the conversation ideas about how TIF and tax abatement could be used more judiciously so that they're not perpetuating segregation. So everything that Otis just described is absolutely true. These are tools that are intended to incentivize development. So the logic is that, if they are being used, it's to build housing or economic development that would not otherwise happen. So the language that's often used is they would not happen but for the incentive. But the question we're trying to raise is, is that the case in the Central West End or in Lafayette Square where we have stronger housing markets now? So these are the sorts of questions we're trying to raise.
And I'd like to add that we are, very concerned about that as well. And part of what we want to do, and in fact, if anyone ever visits a TIF commission that is hosted by the city, they will know that a large part of the discussion is about inclusion. And so I think where we want to go is to be sure that that the increment that is being earned also includes a way to provide some of that increment to lesser neighborhoods. And so one way to do that is through community benefits agreements and other tools. We're looking at those. We aren't there yet, but we're evolving to that.
Amen. That's exactly the sort of idea that we're excited about.
There seems to be a general feeling out there. We've had some communications from listeners anticipating this program in which they feel that this is not really happening. I'll just use a line from Adam Shroud, whom you may know. He's a developer, I guess. He thought you might. He said, a good plan will help guide TIF incentives to parts of the city that truly need it and not just parts of the city that currently attract a high level of private investment. It needs to be acknowledged that TIF may not be the right tool for the job. So there's one person, and we have other communications, feeling that it's going to the big players, not to the neighborhoods that really need it.
Well, let me just say that the TIF instrument is available citywide, and so it can be used for any project within the city that where a TIF would be appropriate. Obviously, I said TIF appropriate in the sense that many times the size of the investment dictates whether you want to go through the expense of doing it, because it is a cost to doing it. And so that that tool is available. I think what I was mentioning is that you have to have a project in order to be able to incentivize it, right? And so if we had the large projects available in North St. Louis, we would incentivize it for sure. I think what we're trying to do is to set the framework and the stage such that development and incentives, not incentives, but development and the desire to develop is the same as in the Central Corridor, so that people and investors and developers would move to the north as well as to the south, and those tools would be available if, in fact, they chose to use them.
Are TIFs only available for large projects?
Generally, they're sort of because of the cost. Projects that are less than $1 million are not necessarily the kind that you want to, but just because of the legal cost and other tools that are needed in order to be able to get it done. So many times you almost need to pass that threshold in order to be able to make it efficient for you.
Molly, this is where you come in, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. So I have a couple of thoughts. One is, a big underlying problem is that we haven't revised our comprehensive plan for the city of St. Louis since 1947. So that puts us in a very reactive mode. So we are sort of beholden to the developers who come to us and have to respond kind of reactively to what comes, whereas other cities like Charlotte have plans saying, this is where this part of the city, these sorts of incentives are allowed. Over here, they're not. We're more treating these proposals on a case-by-case basis. And there are really clear trends to what that means in terms of what areas are seeing development and what aren't. So the use of TIF is really focused in the Central Corridor. 84% of TIF dollars in the city of St. Louis are focused on, the belt between downtown and Forest Park. And 72% of tax abatement dollars are used in the Central Corridor. And this is, a significant percentage of hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I think, in addition to working with developers, we have to set the plan more proactively to talk about where we are really prioritizing development at this point.
So let me jump in and just say that that is a desire of the city as well, such that we can get a plan in place. And so, but getting that plan in place, we need dollars in order to be able to get a citywide plan done. And so we're seeking those dollars. So I agree with Molly. We do need to have a framework and a plan, and that is number one on our hit parade. And so after probably in the early spring or summer, we hope to be able to see a planning effort get started here in the city.
How many TIF projects do we have going at the present time? Do you know?
Well, this past session, there were five actually that were approved, They ranged all over the place, but for the most part, five, effectively about $391 million dollars of projects that were approved, with the TIF amount roughly about $58, $59
million. Just to be clear on this, if I am a homeowner in a lighted neighborhood, let's say, and I want to make an improvement on my home, can I somehow qualify for a TIF? It's not an expensive home. It's not a $1 million home.
It's probably not the tool for you. Yeah. I mean, there is tax abatement that would be helful partially. And in fact, we during this last session, at the same time we did five TIFs, we actually did 88 tax abatements. and roughly about 15 of those were for projects that were over $1 million. Some of those over $1 million were, in fact, projects where nonprofits were actually doing multiple housing units and that kind of thing. But most of them, the other 70 or so, were actually for homes that are throughout the city, most in North City or in South City, very few in the Central Quarter.
So actually, well, it's the majority is in the Central Quarter still with tax abatement. If you look at the projects that have been approved since 2000. And I wanted to say a little bit too about a phrase that you use, blighted neighborhoods.
Well, so, I wanted to get to that.
Right.
I used it intentionally.
Go ahead. Blight is a very important term here. It's defined by state law, and it's very, very broad. So a lot of what this boils down to is what do we consider blight? And it's typically not thought of in terms of the neighborhood. It's thought about in terms of the site. So something that we would like to see is thinking more about the context, the neighborhood context, and in areas that have already received lots of incentives that are doing relatively well, like the Central West End, Shaw, neighborhoods like this, that we think more about the neighborhood context when we're making these decisions, not just the specific lot that we're talking about.
Well, in fact, we do, because a few years ago we did a market value analysis, and it gave us a sense of the value of the various neighborhoods and residential properties. And so as we make these decisions, we do have that in mind. In fact, we do not accept applications for the most part in the Central Quarter for tax abatement. Occasionally we do, and the reason that we do, sometimes there's a one property that's been sitting there for ages and ages and ages, and it's the one thing that can help get that particular project done. But for the most part, you can see through all of the things that we do that we don't really do a whole lot of tax abatement in Lafayette Square on the Hill or in the Central Quarter for the most part. Now we have done some, and whenever we do, they always have attention focused on them for sure.
Well, I know one that's going to have a lot of attention focused on it and has, and that's that building that's going to go on Kings Highway in West Pine. It's going to be a 36-story building, many, many millions of dollars, with significant tax abatement. Now, we're not talking TIFs here, but tax abatement is being up to 95%, I think.
Yeah. Well, generally, tax abatement is 100%, and so in this case, we negotiated to 95. But take that particular facility that you're talking about. There are huge infrastructure costs in going subsurface for parking.
Five stories deep, as I understand.
But it also will yield a product that is not yet available here in the city. And so there are some issues that the tax abatement will allow the developer to tackle that he would otherwise not be able to.
But it is in the area that you're saying, has been quite heavily
developed. Well, let me give you the other piece. When you talk about building in the city and in most places in the city, there's a cost per square foot to build. And so the difference in the cost per square foot in the county, or in this case, let's compare Clayton to the city, is a lot different than it is in the city. And so particularly if we talk about downtown, so you could be somewhat between $8 to $10 per square foot difference in the cost. And so how do we get people to invest in building a new product? And so, I always look at it. Are we talking about investment here? And I always look through that through incentives as it, and we're doing this evaluation now. Are we looking at doing an analysis of that to determine whether or not we are giving too much of to the investor?
May I interject quickly? So I just want to be clear, too, that it's still, the report that SLGC commissioned a couple of years ago showed that 72% of tax abatement was being used in the Central Corridor. So it is a significant fraction. And I wanted to refer listeners also to our website, teamtiffstl.com. We have maps of where these projects are used and both TIF and tax abatement. So there are a lot of resources there and raw data if people want to get into the numbers for themselves.
But I need to interject that the reason that we have a viable Central Quarter today is because of the early investment that we had in there. Okay, so if you go back to the 200 acres that is Cortex,
right,
and you look at the improvements that are there, it would not have happened without the TIF instrument that is being used there. But there are other things that we look at as far as building density there. And so, as we look back and we can see where we are today, we say, no, you shouldn't have 15 years ago invested there. But it is because of that investment that we have the Central Corridor that we have today.
Amen. So, the tax credits have been important downtown. There has been a lot of, I think, wise use of tax credits and TIF. I think the question now is, can we enjoy the benefits of that? Now that we've incentivized and sort of kicked off that development, can we expect the market to take it from here in certain areas and we can focus our efforts more north and south? Right. And I also wanted to speak briefly about this issue of vacant lots and whether or not there's interest.
Can you hold that thought for a moment?
Sure
I have
thing.
To take
sure
a break. You'll put the pause button on
Got
right
it.
Here, Molly. Thank you so much. Molly Metzger is with the Brown School of Social Work. We're talking about tax increment financing. She's with me in studio, as is Otis Williams, director of the St. Louis Development Corporation. Back to continue our conversation in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Molly Metzger and Otis Williams. We're talking about tax increment financing. And Molly, I interrupted you. You wanted to talk about vacant lots, I think.
Yes. Yeah, so basically the point I want to make is that a vacant lot is not a vacant lot is not a vacant lot. So, we might see a lot that's laying dormant for a while. It might be, if it's in a particular part of town, that there really is no interest in developing that lot. But it might also be that it's owned by a private owner who's holding out for the best possible price, a speculator essentially. And the assumption is that, these incentives will be available to meet that price. And if that's the case—
If it's $1 million project, right?
Right, yeah. If it's a big one. So for instance, Everly on the Loop, in the Loop on Del Mar, received a $12 million abatement to do very high-end luxury housing. It's student housing, though it isn't formally affiliated with WashU. And so this is the kind of example that, it's prime real estate. It's located right near the Del Mar Metrolink stop, building off of all of the previous investment in the Loop. So this is one of the examples where I think this is just a real misuse of tax abatement. $12 million, $7 million of which would have gone to the schools. So this is the kind of project that we're saying enough is enough. We want to see tax abatement used where it's really needed.
Again, I get confused when you're using the phrase tax abatement. We're
right.
talking about tax increment financing. And that's where I started by trying to lessen the confusion
right.
between the two.
Yes. Basically, tax abatement, you are essentially off the hook for paying those taxes.
Right.
So as Otis described, the taxes are frozen at the pre-development amount. With TIF, with tax increment financing, the new increment, whatever the new tax revenue that would be coming in is diverted. So instead of paying your typical taxes, you're paying payments in lieu of taxes that go back to pay off the project. And mm-hmm. in addition to the property taxes in Missouri, we also can divert sales taxes, earnings taxes, and other taxes to those TIF projects. So it's a little more complicated. I have a presentation I've been doing around the city since June called What is TIF? And when we spend a little more time, describing what are these incentive tools. We start with tax abatement. It's a little easier, I think, for people to wrap their head around.
Sure.
And then we get into TIF, which is a little more complicated.
Yeah. Do you want to
just comment that this is, again, one of the examples I mentioned of the cost to build within the city or within the region and the return on investment that investors will need in order to make it work in their scheme of development. And so one of the things that we look at, and we looked at this obviously when we as we look along that corridor, Molly's correct. When you look at certain areas, you can see that it is, that there is energy going into that area. We will eventually phase out in an area, but we also have to recognize what is needed in order to be able to get a project done. So sometimes we have the issues of parking, we have the issues of infrastructure that's surrounding it, it's the streetscape issues that are related to it. And so we look at that, and then we do an evaluation. So one of the things that came out of our incentive study is that one of the top recommendations that we would do a quantitative analysis of various incentives that were being provided. And we do that for tax abatements over $1 million, and we do that for all of our tax increment financing projects. And so I think that that is evolving as we speak, and as we look at that, we are making improvements along the way. But I dare say that the project that Molly referred to would not have happened but for having the tax abatement there.
The line I keep reading is 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing.
Well, there are those that would say that, and then there are others who would argue that it would have happened anyway. But I think in this case, the project would not have happened had we not done it.
And the question, too, is not just would this specific project have happened, but maybe something else would have happened. So, I mean, that is really the question we're trying to get at here is, you know, maybe any developer is going to say, we need this incentive for this to work. Of course, they're trying to make a profit, and that's the argument that they will make. And maybe it's true that they won't come without the incentive. But if it's a real prime piece of real estate, like, you know, the Westminster project in the Central West End, or, you know, there are numerous examples where maybe that developer would have walked away. The question is, you know, if this is a 15-year abatement, can we really assume that nothing will happen there for the next 15 years? Again, in some parts of the city, that is possible that that might happen. But in the Central West End, in the Loop, probably not.
But even in the Central West End throughout the city, most often you will find that investments have not occurred, even though we think it's in a prime area. Generally, 10 years may have passed or 15 years may have passed on the vacant lot that is still sitting there. And so the only way that it will happen is because of the incentive that is there.
You know, I think there is also a general feeling out there, Otis, and perhaps you should take this first, is that somehow by using these devices, and I don't think anybody's going to deny that bringing in IKEA and Cortex is good for the community, it's good for the city, it's good for revenue and what have you, but that somehow by shifting these funds around or baiting the taxes altogether, we are somehow mortgaging the future, and that it's costing us in the areas of education and other areas. I have an email here from an Ashley who writes, please discuss how TIFs can influence local education. Possible to rewrite laws so city politicians can only give away a portion of the tax related to their budget and not hurt students in public schools. There is that feeling out there that somehow we are denying other areas because we're withholding this money.
Okay. So one of the things that happens in our analysis is that we take a look at what benefit will it have for the various taxing districts, to include the school. Mm-hmm. And so let's go back to the philosophy of, will the project happen? And in the city of St. Louis, there for such a long period of time, the project was not happening. And so where we are now is trying to build density within the central corridor, but we also focused on both north and south. And so in our evaluation, we look to see whether or not there is a benefit to the school district or to the taxing district. And so when we do that analysis, we look to see whether or not does it injure the city's general revenue. So one of the things we want to be sure is that it is revenue neutral or it is a benefit to the city. But at the same time, we want to make sure also that it does benefit the districts. So this is one of those where you talked about 50% of nothing. So here we are with with a lot or a abandoned building where nothing has happened. Nothing has happened for 10 to 15 years. And now something is happening. And by the way, there will be a benefit to the taxing districts. And so we see that as a plus. And then after the abatement period is over, then there are full, taxes being generated toward those entities.
Well, there we are back with the word abatement again. And again, if my understanding is correct, taxes are being deferred.
Yeah,
taxes.
And in this case, if it's tax increment finance, then the taxes are being deferred. But they continue to get the taxes that were there previously.
Molly.
Quickly on this point of protecting the school funding, there are other cities that have taken a more proactive approach to protecting school funding. So Kansas City now caps tax – okay, again, going back to the tax abatement side of the coin, caps it at 75%. So right now in St. Louis, you can have 100% tax abatement, so no new taxes, no increased taxes for up to 10 years, and then 50% tax abatement after that. So, you know, there are other cities that have – used public policy to shift this and to, you know, sort of protect the portion of that tax revenue that would have gone to school. So that is something that we could do. And in the mayoral debates that are happening right now, we're really excited to see some of the candidates sort of standing up for these sorts of ideas.
Is this in the cards, Otis, a change in the whole process, do you think?
We're looking at ways to improve all around. And so, you know, as people bring ideas to us, so we're not locked in one way or the other. And so over time, if you go back to when we first started out the massive number of TIFs that are in the city back to about 2001 timeframe, you can look to see that TIF policy has evolved and it will evolve even further. And we will incorporate some of the ideas that that are being discussed. So we've established a group to have interaction with to give us better ideas and that kind of thing. And so a member of my staff meets regularly with the group, and we get feedback from the group. They attend our TIF meetings, and during the course of evaluating any specific TIF, we get ideas, and so we may the next time around have some improvement. So we welcome ideas, and we try and do things with, you know, if we can within the law and move it on. But where we are at this point is trying to understand the impact, and then we will roll out I call them reform ideas down the road.
Is there any kind of a number out there that would indicate how much has been given up through abatement and TIFs and how much we've gotten back in return so that we can put it on a scale and see how that goes?
You know, I don't have it here in front of me, but in the incentive study, it mentioned the number of over the last 15 years, it mentions the number of the amount of tax abatement that was provided. It also mentions the amount of TIF that was provided. But if you look at the amount of investment that's comparable to that, we're talking billions of dollars of investment and probably $400 to $500 million of incentive that was there.
Go ahead, Molly.
I do have the numbers. So from that same incentive study, it said that since 2000, more than $400 million had been invested in TIF and more than $300 million in tax abatement. And it didn't really exactly get at the question of, you know, what do we get in return for that? It did say that in some instances, it seemed like we were foregoing revenue, that these were projects that might have happened or similar projects would have happened without the incentive. Yeah. But that's the big question, right? In some cases, it's hard to predict what would have happened but for the incentive.
Right. Well, I can tell you what would have happened, because over the previous 15 years, nothing had happened. And so I like to use the example where there were 150 buildings in 2001 downtown that were vacant. And we use a number of tax financing buildings bills and ordinances to tackle some of that vacancy. And so now we're down to less than two dozen. It changes the I call it the one blight. It changes the occupancy and residential component of downtown. It makes it more walkable and all those things. But we are at this point also looking at, you know, through our analysis tool, what should we be doing in the future with that as well? And so, but it was at that point in time a tool. TIF and tax abatement were tools that we used to try and eliminate some of the vacancy and blight that was in downtown.
And this is, Molly, what you and yours are looking at.
That's correct. And I really want to say too that I appreciate SLDC Otis's willingness to engage in this conversation with us. His staff has been really generous with their time. So we will definitely continue this conversation. But one of the key pieces moving forward, how we use these tools that we would like to see is more inclusionary housing in particular. So in some of these neighborhoods that we're talking about, we've seen a decline in the Black population in particular. Shaw has lost 39% of its Black population while the rest of the population has been growing. So, you know, people disagree about whether or not gentrification is a major problem for St. Louis. I'm one of the people who thinks that actually it is in some neighborhoods. And, you know, we have these wonderful, diverse places. We want to keep them that way, keep them affordable. And these tools could be used to promote that.
We have a minute left. Go ahead, Otis.
One thing I wanted to point out is that the TIF law is actually written such that it does protect the DSEG sales tax and the commercial surcharge and the personal property tax. So even though we may be doing TIF in those areas, that part of it still goes to the school district.
Do you see a day, though, and again, we only have a few seconds left, a day when much smaller projects, well under $1 million, might somehow take advantage of this process?
I don't think that will occur just because of the complexity of satisfying the law.
Molly, you don't look happy.
No, I think it's really important that we think about economic development in terms of small business owners as well as the big corporate players. And so that is something that is not necessarily just up to SLDC, but, you know, the new mayor will hopefully chart a way in terms of supporting all St. Louisans.
We're going to have to leave it there. I'm afraid our time is up. Thanks to Dr. Molly Metzger for being with us from Washington University, a member of Team TIF, Otis Williams, director of the St. Louis Development Corporation. Thank you both so much for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.